critics Alan Sepinwall and Matt Zoller's sites are going to be in St. Louis tomorrow at the Jewish Book Festival talking about TV, the book, which I talked to both of them about earlier this year. And then Alan was back on my show just a few weeks ago to discuss his new book about the TV show Breaking Bad called Breaking Bad 101. And after that interview aired and I posted it as a podcast on harrisonline.com, I got a message from an attorney named Stephen Keslowitz, who said, hey, I've got a book about Better Call Saul. And I've written books about showbiz stuff before. He wrote The World According to the Simpsons and The Tao of Jack Bauer. And now he's got Why You Better Call Saul, which is about the Breaking Bad spinoff that is going to next year move into its fourth season on FX. So after looking through the book, I said, hey, this is a pretty good recap of what's in there and some interesting legal stuff as well. So we'll look at it from the TV and legal sides with Stephen Keslowitz, who joins me now. Hi, Stephen. How are you?
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on here. Did you get the endorsement of both Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould, the creators of Better Call Saul, for this book?
So the book is independent, but what's been great is that I sent copies to the whole team, and Vince Gilligan sent me this incredible letter telling me it's wonderful and outstanding. I saved the letters on Better Call Saul letterhead. So you know, they've been so supportive, everybody from the show, and had lunch with members of the team and attended the premiere. So it's really been very, very well received.
Well, for those of you who don't know, Better Call Saul is a prequel to Breaking Bad. It takes the action 6 years before Walter White and everybody else involved in the meth business got involved, although some of the characters were already there in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where the TV show was shot and was set, and so is Better Call Saul, which stars Bob Odenkirk as Jimmy McGill, the lawyer who eventually will become Saul Goodman, who is a running character in Breaking Bad. Are we going to see that happen next year, do you think?
That's a good question. I think I've spoken to the team about this, and obviously they don't want to reveal too many details. You know, certainly getting closer. I would bet that the show would be on for one or probably two more years. So, you know, maybe towards the end of next season would be my prediction.
Okay.
We'll see.
One of the characters on the show early on describes Saul Goodman as the kind of lawyer that guilty people hire. Is that true?
Yeah, you know, I think in a lot of ways, and you saw that Jimmy McGill was hurt by that. I think, you know, the idea is that, you know, guilty people obviously need lawyers too, right? Our society is built on a strong criminal defense system. But, you know, if you are innocent, you know, maybe you don't go to the guy who's perceived as kind of sleazy. So that was probably what was behind that comment.
Yeah. Sleazy, but also struggling internally, right?
That's true. That's true. And, you know, when I say sleazy, Jimmy McGill is, I describe him as ethically questionable. And when he becomes Saul Goodman, he's just totally morally bankrupt. And it's really, the show is obviously based on that, you know, that transformation, how he changes, what makes an attorney change in that way. And as a practicing attorney, you know, I find it fascinating to see the situations that he's in and think about how he could have, you know, done certain things differently, and things could have turned a different way.
Yeah, but Jimmy's internal struggle doesn't seem to be about do I want to represent this person or not, but more about what kind of person he's going to be.
Right. Right, and I think not just Jimmy McGill, you know, a number of the other characters, you see Kim Wexler, you see, you know, throughout the show, even Nacho on the other side of the show, Mike, they're struggling with their own moral compasses. And we see, of course, for some of those characters, how they turn out in Breaking Bad. And I think what is so great about Better Call Saul and the writers create these endearing characters that we kind of relate to. We want them to succeed, and yet we know that they become, you know, bad actors. They're bad people in Breaking Bad, and yet they Better Call Saul pulls us in and makes us like them.
Do you know attorneys like him?
That's a good question. I've certainly interacted with attorneys that have not been scrupulous. I think that, you know, I don't work with people who do sort of ads, of tacky advertisements, stuff like that. I work with more larger law firms, things like that. But sure, I think that, you know, there certainly is a segment of the legal population that's dishonest and, you know, acts like that. Sure.
Do you think there are some kids who went through law school while Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul were on TV who think to themselves, someday I want to have an office in a strip mall with an inflatable Statue of Liberty on the roof?
You know, look, and right, and it's funny. I mean, I don't think that most people start off that way. And by the way, see, Jimmy McGill obviously didn't either. And I think it's also how you view the law. You see the distinction between how Jimmy views the law and his brother Chuck views the law. Chuck has, like, this great respect for the law and the legal system and doing things the right way, although I talk about him about certain things he doesn't do the right way. Jimmy McGill uses the law as, like, a malleable tool to achieve an end. Not that there's anything wrong with that, right? I think it's just a different perspective on how you perceive the law. And, you know, were Jimmy to adhere to ethical rules, and I go through these thoroughly in the book, I think that's all fine. It's part of zealous advocacy. So you have to, you know, draw that line and where's the distinction. But it's interesting to see the two brothers and how they interact.
You say in the book, I'm quoting you here, watching an episode of Better Call Saul is for me akin to issue spotting on a law school exam.
Right.
What does that mean?
Well, so especially a perfect example is you mentioned, you quoted Betsy Kettleman earlier about choosing Jimmy. You know, watching the Kettlemans and the number of issues that we see as they go back and forth between Kim Wexler and Jimmy, what was fascinating about that, and this is really just as an attorney, I was sort of watching the interactions of the lawyers as they talked about their clients. At one moment, Betsy Kettleman was, you know, Jimmy was the attorney. Another moment, it was Kim. Are they allowed to talk about that? You know, divergent interests, client conflicts. Those are the types of things, because when I watch Better Call Saul, you sort of take it at face value. You're just watching these interactions. If you think about it more deeply, that's why it kind of reminded me of a law school exam, because you can peel out all these different layers and issues. And the Kettleman is kind of my perfect example, because that was sort of the hardest part of the book to write. There's so many small legal things that the writers intentionally put in there to pick up on. So.
Was it with the Kettlemans that they knew that he wasn't their lawyer yet, but he knew too much, and so they offered him a bribe, and he said, I can't take a bribe, but I can take a retainer?
That's right, and I go through that thoroughly in the book. That's right. fascinating scenario. And Jimmy's justification, at one point he said, well, this is the rock upon which I'll build my church. And I thought that was really fascinating, right? He knew he was sort of doing the wrong thing at one point, taking the bribe and returning it, but trying to justify it by saying, you know, look, I'll build a good practice, even though it's sort of starting off on something that's rocky and disingenuous.
But that must happen with lawyers all the time, particularly criminal defense attorneys who have to have somebody come to them. And, you know, that person isn't offering them a bribe to keep quiet about it, but they are paid money. They're given a retainer, and now the lawyer can't say anything about it. That's the same thing, isn't it?
Well, I mean, criminal defense attorneys are required to maintain the confidentiality of their clients, right? So if a defendant comes in and tells the lawyer, look, I'm guilty, you know, the lawyer has to proceed in an honest way, but, you know, can't reveal that.
But only once that person has become a client. Up until that moment, the lawyer can say whatever they want. So
the moment you walk into an attorney's office, you're now a prospective client, and there's a whole set of rules that apply to that.
Oh.
You know, one of the issues I talked about was Nacho. When he walked into Jimmy's office during the first season, you know, basically threatening Jimmy, and Jimmy kind of said to him, look, everything between you and me is confidential. I consider you my client. Very interesting question as to whether Nacho was his client. And attached to that, what obligations does he have? On the one hand, you argue Jimmy is threatened and he feels he has to kind of take on this representation. You know, other questions. Is Nacho even looking for a lawyer at that moment? And as you go through that analysis, I think it's a very difficult question as to whether he's a client. That's going to change a lot of the, you know, ethical answers as to whether, you know, Jimmy proceeds in the right way going forward.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, you know, warning the Kettlemans and, you know, revealing Nacho's threats. All of those become very interesting issues.
You mentioned Jimmy's brother Chuck earlier. Chuck McGill, played brilliantly by Michael McKean on Better Call Saul, in the last episode of season 3, which aired just a few months ago. We see him frustrated by being forced out of the law firm that he had been in, and frustrated by his interactions with Jimmy, and seemingly setting fire to his own home. Well, he does set fire to his own home, and whether he survives that is something that I guess is the cliffhanger for season 4. What do you think? Is Chuck done?
I think he's done. I think it's pretty clear. I think that Better Call Saul is not that type of series that would sort of, you know, do something like that, bring a character back from, like, you know, seemingly dead. Like, I don't think it's that type of series. I think it's a smart, fairly slow-moving series, and if they're going to do an action like that, I think that's kind of the end of it.
Interestingly, I talked to actor Patrick Fabian recently. He's got a movie out called Driver X on Better Call Saul. He plays Howard Hamlin, who is Chuck McGill's partner in the law firm. He told me that he is going to be back for season 4. He just lets us know how often or what he's going to be doing.
Yeah, Patrick's a good friend of mine, actually. We've had lunch a few times, and I caught up with him at the season 3 premiere, so he's a great guy.
Yeah.
You know, I think that comment from him probably is intended to be, you know, mean that Chuck is going to be back in kind of like flashback scenes. Better Call Saul has done a little bit of that. You know, they've shown Jimmy growing up and his father and his mother at different times. That would be my prediction, and I think the show has hinted at that.
He and I were also talking about how his character, Howard Hamlin, was perceived as a villain early on because of the way he treated Jimmy. But that view kind of softened later, didn't it?
Absolutely, and I think it's funny. I think in each of the first few seasons, there are moments where you sort of think Howard is this bad guy, and it turns out, if you take a step back, that he's kind of always, you know, pretty straightforward. He never really did anything terrible. It certainly was Chuck who turned on Jimmy and trying to basically sabotage his career. Howard always liked Jimmy, called him Charlie Hustle. He presumably wanted to hire him at HHM, and Chuck got in the way, and you see that at different points. So I think at some point during season 3, Howard just had enough of the McGill brothers. They've caused him a lot of stress.
Yeah. There are still two major characters in the show we haven't talked about, and one of them is Kim Wexler, again, played brilliantly by an actress named Rae Seahorn, who's wonderful. She is not in Breaking Bad, so she's in this 6 years earlier prequel, but we know that she won't be part of Saul Goodman's life once he gets involved with Walter White and the rest. So what happens to her between now and then?
Yeah, so I think that's probably the right prediction, although the series has left open the possibility that Saul Goodman has a girlfriend or a wife back home, because they actually don't show his personal life. I do think it's a little bit hard to believe that would be the case, because, you know, he's so fundamentally different. Even when he talks to women in his office is just different, so it's hard to imagine he'd be coming home to Kim. But, you know, I think it'll be interesting. I think Vince Gilligan has hinted at kind of like an explosive scene, possibly with, you know, Kim and Jimmy down the line. Something that, you know, who knows? Maybe that's what really puts Jimmy over the edge.
All right. Well, while we're speculating about Kim moving away from Saul slash Jimmy in the coming seasons, we know that Mike Ehrmantraut, played by the always intense Jonathan Banks, is going to become more and more a part of Jimmy slash Saul's life. And here's a guy who, would it be correct to call him casually evil?
It's interesting. I think that's, you know, yes, I think he certainly becomes that way.
He was a straight shooter as a cop, though.
I think of him in Breaking Bad as largely a thug, and that was what's so interesting about Better Call Saul, because he's somewhat endearing. You know, he's sort of a, obviously very serious, doesn't smile much. I have a photo I took with him where he's smiling, and that's
a rarity.
Attention. Yeah. But, you know, I think there's a deepness to him, and I write in the book about his moral code. I think that he actually does have some moral sense. He, when he's hired to do a job, he finishes the job. He sort of becomes detached to, you know, certain elements of it. But, you know, he has this great dialogue with another character on the show, and he's describing what a criminal is. And he said, look, you know, if you take something that doesn't belong to you. You're a criminal. He says, a good one or a bad one, that's up to you. And I go through that that scene carefully in the book, and you know, talk about, you know, what does that actually mean? What is Mike's you know, code of honor, in a sense? Because I think in Better Call Saul, he clearly has boundaries he won't cross. You see him adhering to something, and I tried to get at what that is in the book.
Yeah. Last question for you, Stephen.
Yeah.
Can Jimmy McGill / Saul Goodman become and remain Cinnabon Gene forever? Or if you were a betting man, would you think he can't keep doing that?
I don't think he can do that. I think the show has also hinted at that. And the flashback, not the flashback, the beginning of each scene where they show the black and white scene. Last year's was fascinating, where he just sort of, you know, fainted and just couldn't take certain things that were going on.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I talk to him a lot about in the book about how Jimmy and Saul and Gene really are wearing masks. And I think, you know, the cruelest fate for Saul Goodman is that he becomes this character, Gene, where he has to kind of hide who he is. And, you know, you see that in those small black and white scenes at the beginning of each season where he's just, you know, continuing this struggle with identity. And I can't see him surviving, you know, as Gene. He hopefully has something else up his sleeve.
Yeah, it's like being in witness protection, but without the protection.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely.
The book is called Why You Better Call Saul, What Our Favorite TV Lawyer Says About Life, Love, and Scheming Your Way to Acquittal and a Large Cash Payout. And here's the attorney who wrote the book, Stephen Keslowitz. Thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.